SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Memorial Day, race fans, and of course, the importance of the day, those that gave all. That one of the great sayings, all gave some gave all, and if you aren't a social media type or you haven't poked around, I put up, as I think I do every year now, pretty religiously, the remarkable and frequently overlooked memorial at Belmont. And I was as guilty as anybody overlooking it for years. When you're walking toward the parking lots, out the clubhouse, the backside of the clubhouse, and walking past the racing office, that big stone. Maybe you're going to be there today. We may actually, I don't know yet. It depends on how much planting Tina gets done in the next 3 hours, I think, to see if we're going to go down. We're in the 10th race today. But for those of you that have never really looked, go up to that rock where the paths, the path diverges to the left, to the racing office, and then to the right behind the racing office to that green area overlooking. You can watch the horses in the Belmont paddock, and at that fork in the path is a stone, and no one seems to have a concrete answer about it. I've actually kind of poked around and have tried to find some of the origins, and no one's 100% sure of who made the had the notion to put that stone, that bronze on the stone, but it honors the four chaplains. And I every year I tell you this story, for those of you that have heard previously, but for those of you that might not have ever heard it, either missed Memorial Day shows or whatever, but the four chaplains is as remarkable a story of sacrifice for Memorial Day as you're going to find. And the four chaplains, George Fox, Methodist minister, Lieutenant Alexander Good, the Jewish rabbi, Lieutenant John Washington, Roman Catholic priest, and Lieutenant Clark Poling, a Dutch Reformed minister, all aboard the Dorchester, the USAT Dorchester, that was torpedoed and sank February 4th, 1943. And under the circumstances, the four chaplains gave their life jackets to other Swabbies and saved four lives at the cost of their own. And this story is less known than it should be. If you delve into it, you'll find that there's actually quite an active legacy, including fourchaplains.org, that raises money and scholarships and so forth. And I'm sure there's other, military-related spots in racing that honor the fallen. But this one, in particular, is to me is just amazing that, and it goes largely unnoticed. So next time you're at Belmont, you're coming for Belmont Festival, which is now just, I mean, in fact, let me think about this. I'm losing track of, believe me, I'm the days are a blur to me right now. A week from today, we'll be coming to you from Belmont. Right? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10th, yes, June 10th. For those of you that are planning to come for Belmont Festival, and things are shaping up nicely for Belmont Festival. Lots of commitments, being publicized. So, but if you're going to be at Belmont, whether you're there for the 50th time, the 100th time, 1,000th time, or first time, if you've never noticed it, or if you've never been to Belmont, take a look. All right. So that's my message of appreciation. And of course, there's certainly, a great legacy of racetrackers that served in the military, and maybe most. Well, I don't say most well-known, but the ones that come to mind, Dickie Small, the late Dickie Small. In fact, John Scheinman, right? Scheinman's won two eclipses, and one of them was an extensive Dickie Small story, Vietnam for Dickie. And I'm going to wager that Pat Kelly might be listening, and Pat's father, a medic in World War II, notably. But there's so many others, and then there's actually there's some stories that are racetracker adjacent, like Rich Glaser. The late Rich Glaser, who every time we would preview the Delaware season, we would have Rich tell that the unbelievable story of him in Vietnam, and using his opportunity on the phone home to get a bet down. it's so great. It still just makes me smile. It's just such a great story. And the way he would tell it, he got a bet down on the Del Cap. He didn't want to miss the Del Cap. Despite being in Vietnam. So anyway, there's our morning appreciation and Memorial Day, and a fun day. It's a good racetrack day, obviously, and we'll do a fair amount of handicapping today. Nick Tamaro is going to join us. Nick and I will go through, I think, cross-country pick five, the 8th, 9th, 10th at Belmont, and the 8th and 9th, so the late pick three, essentially, and I've already written up. I got to put it up at the website, wait till after we get scratches, but terrific showcase card, and we're going to, in fact, Naj is going to visit, Naja Thompson. We'll get a little New York bred feature in, and speaking of New York breds, I was down at Rock Ridge on Thursday. Do some referencing on that front. But the late double at Churchill with the winning colors, where, Echo Zulu, Echo Zulu comes back, and you got to figure, she's tough in there. She's got to come back running, let's be honest. She's coming out of the very good effort in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Second to Goodnight Olive. And, that had been, interestingly, she'd won the Dogwood. And, that had been off of a fairly extensive layoff. And she ran very well in the Filly and Mare Sprint. After having a somewhat, kind of truncated season. Remember, it took her forever to get started, and she showed up in the Fairgrounds Oaks and wins a thriller over Hidden Connection, then ran okay in Secret Oaths Oaks last year, but then missed a stretch When she's right, she is really good, and it's great to see her back in action today. So it's one of the highlights, certainly, as she gets her four-year-old season started. Echo Zulu. But there's a couple of interesting horses in here at prices. Speaking of horses that are coming back, Marissa's Lady. Marissa's Lady shows up in here for Bill Morey, and it hasn't been seen since last summer. Speaking of incomplete years, she's sort of like Echo Zulu Light. for 4-year-old debut, and you know, she didn't have as celebrated a 3-year-old season. In fact, she was even better, you could arguably say better at 2, but she's worth keeping an eye on. She's been, with Turfway staying open, she's been working straight along, and there is a series of bullets. She's 10-1. Marissa's Lady gets the hot riding Rafi Bejarano. Speaking of military tributes, born again hard. Rafi Bejarano. Yeah. But that gets me to, it'll be so easy for me to digress, but I hope you saw 3 technique yesterday. That was fabulous. 3 technique. Now, actually, I'm losing track. Was that yesterday or was it Saturday? We went to Rochester for the baby. We had to see the baby. and it was Saturday. Holy cow. But 3 technique. With a little bit of wasn't a mammoth upset, but it was enough of, right? I think it was 5-1. Is that right? I got the chart here somewhere. But, this, of course, Jason Cook, who won last year, on the Oaks undercard. And it was it was amazing with his daughter Peyton and the whole story of, being a single dad. It just a great, I mean, it was fabulous last year, and then it just so happened, I mean, I was kind of poking around, and had the TV on. I think the kids might have been napping, and Bejarano on 3 technique, 5-1, paid $12.58, beat Kapuna, who was like 3-5 for Brett Calhoun and Sanders and Hirsch, and ran a okay race, but just could not withstand 3 technique. And so I put up a picture from last year of Jason and Peyton. It's just the sweetest story. He's done such a great job with this horse. It's amazing. Now 6 and still a horse. And I imagine he could show up later in the meet, even, right? With on the Foster undercard would make sense, right? So anyway, that speaking of Rafi Bejarano, that's where that aside came from. Anyway, Bejarano, Marissa's Lady, Bill Morey, and you've also got Last Leaf for Eddie Keneally. But all eyes on Echo Zulu today in the 8th at Churchill, which will be part of the cross country. So Nick and I'll do that at, it looks like 11. He just said, yeah, he wanted to move back. I've actually kind of bouncing things all over the place here. So I think we'll probably put, as soon as John's sort of waiting for me because I warned him that we may have to move him around a little bit. Mig also just begged off. So we'll get Najah Thompson as mentioned. Rusty Arnold is going to join us. John White will be here for the reason John, it's Monday anyway, but John's going to handicap together with me. We're going to look. We got the 3 grade ones that are half of the force out today. For those that do wait for force out days, they're as if there weren't enough thorny questions about the concept of the jackpots. I mean, we've tried to steer everybody clear, but there are. There are people who say, all right, I'll try it when there's a force out. And this kind of feels like a sequence that you might be you know, very approachable. So for small money and for smaller players, but, you know, this is usually a lot of times it's a fool's errand, to be honest, right? So anyway, we're going to look at it, and there's three grade ones. Why wouldn't we talk to John about those? The Rusty Arnold, as I mentioned, Rusty has been winning races at a, I won't say alarming clip, but he's been winning. He's been winning with alacrity, as we like to say. We'll talk to Rusty, and this actually even goes back a good 1, 2, 3 weeks. Partly, we did. You know, we talked to Patrick Lewis in Nashville, which was tremendous fun, and we talked about Red Carpet Ready with him, and he's involved with the Bromigans. But Rusty has been winning with everything. It happened to also, as part of that, the action on Saturday, I was watching. I don't get a chance that often to have the Fox show on, and so I was watching the Fox show, and they were bouncing back and forth between Belmont and I was chasing the pick five. It's the middle pick four and the pick five at Belmont. So while we were playing with the baby, there's not a lot you can do with the baby. You can hold the baby, you can shake, you know, you can not shake the baby, but you know, you can kind of rock the baby a little, and then you put the baby down. I mean, it's baby's, you know, 5 days old. It's not like, you know, we didn't go play ball. we did play with the Lennon and Cal. We not only did we exhaust them, but Tina and I exhausted each other. I mean, we were like we were like dish rags playing with the kids. Tina found these water balloons. It's the craziest thing. You screw the, there's like a plastic housing that goes on your outdoor spigot, your hose, and you fill up like, I think you might be 25 water balloons at the end of this, you know, octopus kind of plastic housing, and it fills up the water balloons. They've already got rubber bands on them, and so all these water balloons come cascading, you know, off of the spigot and off of this plastic housing. And so we were outside with the kids, and they were having just a riot playing with these water balloons. So Tina actually ended up, when we got home last night, she ended up ordering a case of them because the kids had so much fun. But while I was watching, her ladyship, Brian Hernandez Jr. at 9-1, $20.28, terrific performance. And there were a couple of 3-2 type favorites. This was a maiden group going a mile and a 16th. And a Bernardini filly, a Watts Humphrey homebred, out of the Smart Strike mare, Miss Squeal. And so that's just a handful of, there's maybe three other maidens that Rusty has broken in the last, I don't know, 2 weeks. But at the same time, Rusty's also going to pay tribute to the late Steve Reeser, Stanley Reeser's son, who passed away about, now it's probably 2 weeks or so. In fact, I think it was right after we got back from Nashville, in fact. So Rusty was there in Fort Lauderdale, I think a handful of times, as Steve faded. So we're going to let Rusty pay tribute. While we're on that topic, I also, by virtue of looking at PPs, was surprised by a passing that I completely missed late last year in November. And over the course of the Saturday card, in fact, what was it? I forget. Let me see if I can't find the race. But I saw a horse that was listed as estate of Richard Lugovich, Country Dick. And I did not see that Dick Lugovich had passed, and happened in November, age of 80. And I mean, a fixture in the Northeast, and a breeder, bred New York breds, probably could bring a name up as well with Naj. But always had, you know, always seemed to have a nice horse. You know, New York bred maiden winners or allowance types, and he had that very nice Hold the Salsa. And he had the one the Rand. It was Saturday, right? Hold Me Back, I think. I mean, 106 winners from 1,400 starters, but just looking at he had four horses that made over 100,000. He was a steady, steady presence, and I'm sure there's some of you that, had dealings or had horses or maybe bought produce from him over the years. Yeah, Royal Jest, Lost in the Woods, Regal Chant. There's going to be some sort of a service at some point this spring. And Hold the Salsa. Yeah, it was Hold the Salsa. Saturday in the ninth. Ran second. Ran second. At a mammoth price. 47-1, actually. So I wanted to slip that in. Well, Rusty's going to join us in just a couple of minutes, as soon as I get through some more of the action. The state bred day today, with half a dozen stakes, and the allowances are very good as well. The winning colors we mentioned, they're going to run the George Barker at Finger Lakes today, the All-American at Golden Gate. We talked, if you were listening to the replay just now, you heard at the end of the show from Friday, the visit. That was perfectly timed, actually, going into today, because at Lone Star, they've got a wonderful card. Sadly, you can't bet on it, but you can still look at it. I mean, for those that are going to be on site for the contest, and I should dig up. I'll dig up the results. I did see the clubhouse lawyer himself, Trey Stiles. Trey was up there and doing quite nicely in the Sunday contest. I didn't see the Saturday results, but all the things we talked about with Brandon Lee. But the Chamberlain Bridge, the Memorial Day Sprint, the Ouija Board, Spitestown Sprint, the Texas Derby, and the Steve Sexton Mile. $1 million in, I think, altogether, right? 7, 8, 9, 1.1 million. In stakes monies today. And then the three grade ones that we'll talk about with John. There's also the Mr. Prospector at Monmouth Park as well. All right, couple of highlights, too, from the weekend. Since it's not going to be completely a traditional recap kind of a day. But, the two graded stakes at Santa Anita, and actually, I could probably save some of this for the conversation with John. But that Spirit of Makena, it's so funny. We were completely bereft of sprinters, and now suddenly they're merging every weekend. Not that the Spirit of Makena hadn't already, made a bit of a splash off the San Carlos win, but now follows it up, and followed it up actually from a fig standpoint, paired up to the San Carlos. Joe Bravo's got himself a nice stake winner now on the regular. This is a homebred of Bruce Chandler's, Ghost Zapper, Spirit of Makina, George Papa Padromo has now won three straight and three of four, and is was beaten ahead by holding the loot in the one time got beat, and that was two turns. Undefeated around one turn is Spirit of Makina. This is a serious horse. And 9-year-old CZ Rocket, God bless him, CZ Rocket, another placement and a graded stake. What has he made? $2 million, over $2 million, the City Zip geldings. Just nice still having City Zips out there running. 90 cents on the dollar for Spirit of Makina. And the Daytona result, for those that were paying attention to conversations both with Brad and also on Thursday with Jeff Franklin, we talked about the pace scenario in the Daytona. And Fast Buck, with the potential to wire the field, that's exactly what he did. And Cesar D'Alba has sent out three starts at the meet, and he's 3 for 3. And two of the wins come from with this horse, with Fast Buck, who now becomes a graded stake winner. Calbred, Dailing Ranch, and a Gallant Son out of a Falstaff mare. Unbelievable. Zephyr Racing and D'Alba himself. So we'll have to talk to him and get him on. But that's one of the things, right, that Brad suggested, that Fast Buck could wire that field. And that's exactly what transpired. 2-1 was 5-2 morning line, and What Makes Sammy Run was coming, but couldn't get there in time. So, and then there was also the race we talked about as well, because we did the 6th and the 7th. Katona, just barely, by a neck. R3 Racing, the Klimt Gelding, 4-year-old, for Doug O'Neill with Diego Pereira. Just held off, or just actually got by. They were bobbing heads, Flying Drummer. And they were separated by 10 cents in the betting. Katona went just favored, $2.80 and $2.90 for Flying Drummer. But we talked about that, and who was it? Who was it that I was trying to? I forget who it was that we were trying to get into the number in there. But then yesterday at Santa Anita as well, those Calbred races, and they did not disappoint. And you had a couple of at least mild surprises. And that Franz Valentine, first of all, Rose Maddox went off at 4-1. Big Switch went off at $1.70. And Eddie's New Dream, the Square Eddie, for Ben Cecil and the Redhams. Yeah, Eddie's wire to wire with Mario Gutierrez in that Franz Valentine. And you had Bus Buzz. I haven't looked up the fig, but we were just interested in Bus Buzz coming back here. And wins off easy by a half a dozen. You had, a mild upset. Old Pal in the Snow Chief. Buzz Buzz just was running in an allowance, by the way. But Old Pal beat Boss Sully in the Snow Chief. Chosen Vron, you knew that he was going to be too much in the Thor's Echo. And he was. What a nice horse he is. What is he up to now? Twelve wins, 16 starts, and he's now run his win streak to 7 straight. 7 straight, the Chosen Vron. Wow. And just under 800,000 in earnings. So it was nice. And then, but today the force out should be great. And we'll do it with John. All right. All right. Let me move that out of the way. And there was one race from Friday I want to slip in here. That maiden race that we had talked about, this is interesting, with Dan Blacker. And while Worcester was the one to fear and was bet like he couldn't lose, 30 cents on the dollar, 9-1 on the first-time starter, Smart Mo. We brought this up a little bit, the Sheriffs, the firster for the Searings, Smart Mo debuts 94 buyer, beating Worcester. They were a dozen lengths ahead of the rest of the field. Dan Blacker's horse set the pace, that Finding Love, and then Worcester was right there to pounce, and Smart Mo was, you know, next in line. And he and Worcester just absolutely took off, and they pulled away from the other three. 94 buyer debut. John Sheriffs, the horse to keep an eye on. Smart Mo. Yeah, we'll see how quickly he... And this was a mile that he debuted. And interesting, in terms of trainer stats, Sheriffs was 0 for 7 going on... This is formulator stats. 0 for 7 debuting over a mile. So now he's 1 for 8. let's see, the $20. And a positive ROI. Just like that. And this horse kind of signaled readiness, even though it wasn't a bullet. I did not look at National Turf for workout report. But 59-3 is not a John Sheriffs, a typical John Sheriffs kind of a work. I should go look that up, actually. It'd be interesting to see what Andy Harrington had to say about that move. But those that remembered that John Sheriffs can win first out, back to the 505 days, you got paid. $20. Make you holla. There you go. I love it. All right, let's get Rusty in there. And a little sad it'll be, but then we've got nice things to talk about with Rusty as well. I've been looking forward to this. He heard by now that Patrick Lewis kind of stood in for him a couple of weeks ago. Let's get to Rusty. There we go. Rusty Arnold joining us. And Rusty, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I guess I have to do two things to start it off. I realized later when I was trying to reach you after Red Carpet Ready, it probably took another 2 weeks or 10 days for me to understand why you were unavailable, and so apologies for that.
No, that's no problem. We all had to go to Florida, several of us, and no phones available, and wouldn't have been good to talk to anyway.
Well, I want you to talk about Steve Reaser, and I knew the name, and I suppose I knew the name Stanley, his father, even better because of mutual friends like John Parada. But boy, Steve had just a raft of friends throughout the game.
Yeah, he was I actually met Steve through Stanley. As you brought it up, I'd met Stanley in training, and then Steve got out of the University of Alabama. got on a racetrack similar to me. He was an entry clerk at Delaware when I met him. And I started training Delaware. He was there under Hired Battle and Terry Meeks. I'm going to think that was about 76, 70, something like that, 76, 77 in that neighborhood. And we came out of Delaware, and he lived with me down here, and we lived together off and on, you know, through the early years of the racetrack, different places. And he was best man in my wedding. Wow. And we were close. It was a tough one.
And that the message, Rusty, was really widespread. Actually, I came to understand what was transpiring. From Michelle Fisher.
Correct. Yeah,
we were in Nashville.
He and Michelle were very close.
Yeah.
And, you know, as many people were, and he was a, you know, he'd done it all. He had worked for Stanley. He'd worked in the office. He trained on his own, had one really, really good filly, Count Us In, grade one winner. And then when horses dry up, which they do for different reasons, he was a jock's agent. And then he took care of his mother late in life when she had, you know, needed it. And then he had retired and was living in Florida. And he had a lot of friends in different sections on the front side, back side, Florida. And he was a character and probably not unliked by very few people.
Well, exactly. And you know, you mentioned Count Us In won the Matriarch in 1990.
Correct. Yep.
Wow.
So he did a little bit of everything in our business, and he was a real character. His dad was a character, and he was bright. He was funny. He swam for the University of Alabama. He was there, you know, when Paul Bear Bryant was there, and he'd have those stories, and a lot of those people came. And so it was a tough deal, but met a lot of his friends from different walks of life.
Steve Reeser, and not old, right? I mean, 60-something?
70.
70.
On the button. It just turned 70, which, as you get my age, it's not very old, Steve.
No, exactly. Had been doing okay with the cancer and had treatment, and then it all kind of...
It came quick. He was perfectly normal up until about March 1st, and then got diagnosed and didn't make it barely 60 days. You know, it's a brutal disease, and everybody that, you know, that you're going to talk to has had issues or friends or family members or different people with it, and, you know, tough. It's what somebody told me. That's why they call it the silent killer, and that's what it is.
Yeah, and... there's some other, you know, there's some other people out there right now, in fact, that well liked and widely known, that are fighting similarly, and sending out thoughts to them. Rusty, I appreciate it. I had mentioned the passing, but this was a perfect opportunity talking to you to really pay proper tribute to Steve Reeser.
Well, thank you.
Not at all. Well, and otherwise, there's been a parade of upbeat Rusty Arnold reports, starting with red carpet ready. And, you know, I'm sure Patrick Lewis has already told you how he already stood in for you.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. He did not tell me that. I haven't talked to Patrick, but that was good of him to do that. So he might do a better job than me. He might be a better talker.
No, that's not true. But he's a talker. It just so happened, you know, I was at Nashville for the Iroquois. And
great.
And he was gonna he was there, and he came in the office. I was in the little racing office there, and he said, you know, I'm partners with Bo, and next thing I knew, I said, well, sit down here. And we had he was terrific.
Oh, he is. He's you've probably had about as many talks with him as I have. He's this is the first horse that I've had that he's been part of, and we have talked some, but he is great to talk to, and he is it's great that he was at the Iroquois. I didn't know that. He let that slip. He didn't tell me.
Well, he's partnered up with a couple of different people, including Jordan. He and Jordan Wyckoff have a jumper. And
good.
Yeah, he's good. Well, he's gung ho. I mean, he literally.
He's gung-ho.
he went from 0 to 60 in 3.0 seconds when it comes to, and everybody in racing can, that owns, they know what it's like. All of a sudden, you got 30 in training, you got a handful of broodmares suddenly, you got babies, and, doesn't take much.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the winners, and we'll get to the maidens and that terrific allowance effort for Watts on Saturday that I watched. You got a terrific ride by Brian Hernandez Jr.
It was Brian.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a filly we've kind of struggled to get her to the top, and we blame. Part of it, she had a pretty terrific, horrific fall at Gulfstream. The horse went down in front of her. She went over it. Javier went off, and it took a while to get over that. She, I think more mentally than physically, she seemed to physically to escape any kind of major injury, came back, trained good. But next time we ran her, she was extremely nervous in the paddock, nervous in the post parade, nervous in the gate, which was kind of not her. Didn't run well. We brought her to Keeneland. Her race was probably, Steve, a little better than it looked because we ran into that filly of Brendan Walsh's, which I cannot think of her name, but you'll know her. The four-year-old maiden won off by like 10, 12 lengths that day. We were kind of chasing her, and it was a bad thing to do. And then Brendan ran her back. She won about that far again. When he ran her back, she's 2 for 2. And I can't think of what her name is. But, we bounced out of that race. Jack had her over at Churchill. She had 2 or 3 good works over there. Went into the race in a lot better shape. And, again, a great ride by Brian. Great job by Jack getting her ready, and she really ran well. So kind of she's out of such a good family, it's nice to hopefully she'll turn that corner for us.
Well, this is a Bernardini and obviously a Watts Humphrey homebred, her ladyship. And basically, Brian just stayed inside and – I don't think he realized what was happening behind, but the short-priced favorite was kind of bottled up. Some other riders doing you guys a little bit of a favor inadvertently. But I'm not convinced, that she doesn't win anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not convinced that he didn't know what he was doing when he had that one on his heels because they had her. I mean, she couldn't get inside of us, and they had her on the outside, and I'm not sure, but Brian just kind of backed it up in her face and made it tough on her. So, hey, we get enough bad trips. You got to appreciate when you get a good one.
Exactly. That was Loved, by the way. I just pulled up the PPs. It was Loved was the
that's
horse
her,
of Brendan.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was is a Medaglia d'Oro.
Correct.
Out of Velvety.
I mean, she's something special. It looks like her two races. I know she's four, makes a little difference, but she was just terrific in her two starts. I don't know how far she won by at Keeneland that day, but I know when you look down in your third, beating 18 lengths or something, you say that's a bad race, but she might have won by 12 or something that day. It was a long way.
I want you to pause on something, Rusty, because what you talked about with her having to regain her composure mentally after a fallen foe. And my friend Lee Einsiedler is dealing with this with High Oak, he and Bill Mott, and it's clear that the fall, this was a year ago at Gulfstream, was it in the Fountain? I think it was in the Fountain. And the horse has really been affected by it. How much experience, how often have you had to deal with bringing one back and putting the pieces back together so that they're not scared?
It's actually very rare. You don't have that many take a fall and come out of it unscathed and come back. I mean, Clip Heels, a lot of those falls, unfortunately, are the end of their careers, whether they are injured enough they don't run again or they're fatally injured, so you don't have them come back. So I don't have a ton of experience. And it kind of caught me by surprise because She's a quiet filly, not a lot of issues with her, and she came back and trained fine. She didn't show it in the morning as much as the afternoon, and then I'm sure she related what had gone on to the last race, and it took a little while. So I'm going to say it's going to take each one of them a little different, Steve. Some are going to handle it better, and some aren't. So I think you just got to find out what your individual horse does and help them figure their way through it.
Is it different than the ones that get loose and then slide? And sometimes you get them, they'll fall when they're running free, and they've dropped a rider and they get scraped up on the ground. Get that to happen too.
Yeah, but the only thing you do when it goes in a race is that you hope your horse doesn't relate the racing experience with the fall. They're going to remember it in the morning. If they get loose and fall down, they're probably more or less, they run to your barn and it's not quite the same. But in a race, horses are going to relate a bad experience and the injury to what they're doing at that time.
Speaking of horses running back to the barn, the one that was amazing was the Peter Miller at Churchill Derby Oaks week, and she dropped her rider. She'd been at Churchill like 10 minutes, and yet she knew exactly where her barn was. I mean, she'd been there 2 days or something.
Well, I will give you one of my greatest stories about that if you have time.
Sure, of course.
We bought a filly from the November breeding stock sale, and I'm going to go back into the 80s. Her name was The Wheel Turns. She was a big burn filly. She ended up being a really good brood mare, but she was a good mare, and we bought her in November and brought her down to my barn. We shipped to Belmont about 4 or 5 days later. David Greathouse at Glencrest Farm, David and John Greathouse had purchased her and decided, hey, we want to keep her in training. And we took her to Belmont, and we had her there 2 days. And she threw the rider, going out of my barn, took off, around a racetrack, off the backside, gone. We were walking around looking for her everywhere. Get back on the backside, and they say, you're looking for the loose one? Yeah, I said, she's back here at Lenny Imperio's barn. That's who sold her. They had brought her to the sale, sold her at Keeneland. We shipped back to Belmont, trained her 2 days, and she got loose and ran straight back to his barn on the other side of the racetrack.
That's so great.
And so that's what they know. And then she proceeded to win her next four. She didn't get beat. She won the Barber Fitchie, the Correction, and the Burlow right in a row. So she was a really good horse, but she ran straight home. She knew where home was.
Well, it's funny because that Barber Fitchie was still at Bowie. So
correct. Only trip to Bowie.
I was going to say, so if they're working on what this long-term plan's going to be for Maryland, and it might be Pimlico and Bowie, you might be able to go back to Bowie 40 years later.
Yeah, if you put it was 82, matter of fact, I think
it was,
and it was in the middle of a snowstorm, and they split the race and made two divisions of it, and that was the first graded race that I won.
Oh, that's tremendous!
Yeah, but that filly ran. That filly ran straight home. They ran right to. They were holding her. They knew who she was when she got there.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad this came up. I'm curious now. Now you got me thinking. I'm going to pull up the produce using American Produce Records, which is such a terrific. Such a terrific resource. And boy, she had
in a dam of Vanna Turns, who was a great stakes winner, who produced a really good horse.
Well, let's hit now. You see, now I'm rolling. Vanna Turns, which is a very clever. Oh my gosh, not just one good horse. She got Passionville and Pike Place Dancer.
Yep. But she'd been Oaks winner, wasn't she?
Wow. How about that?
That all came from that mare that they bought, and let's really check my memory. $150,000 November breeding stock sale in '82 at Keeneland.
You're unbelievable. This is amazing. And Pike Place Dancer. That was Jerry, right? That was Jerry Hollendorfer.
Correct.
There you go. There and well, Passionville, of course. He himself, the terrific, particularly sprinters, and which is interesting because he was plenty effective going two turns, Passionville. by seeking the gold. But then he got a lot of sprinters, right? Later.
Yes, he did. Yeah, most of them were sprinters, I thought.
Yeah, he won the Louisiana Derby, the Ohio Derby, the La Jolla. Won the La Jolla in 95. Yeah. Well, this is crazy. Have we?
I think Vanna Turns. Let me think. She won the Joe Namath at Gulfstream on the grass.
Wow! Hold on. Now,
is that correct?
Now I'm going to go look here. Let me see.
I had her.
Wow! And of course, that's a reference to Vanna White, which is clever.
Correct.
Being a. There we go. 154,000 in earnings. She won the Miss Boldabout at Canterbury. Won the first division of the Joe Namath in 1989.
Yep. There's a reason I could remember that. He gave the trophy to me.
Oh, that's awesome. So you got a picture of Joe? Oh, that's
awesome.
Picture
of Joe. Yeah, it was. It was pretty neat.
This is a tremendous trivia question. That's an individual thing. Who else famous has presented trophies to you over the years?
Oh, I mean, we've run into a few. I haven't got the Queen, but one of the biggest thrills I got was when West by West won the Widener, and the Mr. Widener's grandson, Pete Widener, gave the trophy to us, and that's kind of how my family got in the horse business. My grandfather worked for his grandfather at Elmendorf Farm when the Widners owned it, and then they owned Hialeah at that time. They didn't own it when we won that race, but it was kind of nice. I'd never met him, and both our grandfathers, his was, I guess, Joe Widener, and mine worked for him.
Unbelievable. That's very cool. You never know what's going to pop up on this crazy show. What? Unbelievable.
I'm dating myself right now, though, probably.
That's one of the advantages, Rusty, of your hairstyle. It doesn't look like you age.
No, looked old at a young age.
You and Mike Stidham.
Yeah.
Why are so many, that brings up the question, why are so many trainers, you know, follically challenged?
I don't know. Mine just fell out at a very young age.
Let's talk about some of the horses that have been falling out into wins, including that $1 Million Cat the other day at Indy. And we just talked about Watts' horse as well, her ladyship. And you got a couple that are coming up this week that I want to ask about at Churchill. You've got Mended We Stand and Luna Vieja.
Yeah, Luna's a horse we think's on the improve. He started at the Poly, didn't work, didn't run well on it. Got a race at him at Keeneland, much better race. You know, didn't get there. I think we were fifth, but he's improved, and we're expecting some more improvement with him. And Mended has been one of the most unlucky horses at the draw I have ever seen. I think she has drawn the outside post sprinting on a turf three times in a row now, which has been tough, but it's not impossible. And 5.5 is a lot better than a sprints in Florida when they're 5/8. So she's doing well, and expect her to run a lot better. And you know, not to criticize, but when we ran her in Florida, the turf course was getting a little beat up, and you had to be in the hunt. We were drawing wide, and it was a little hard. But I think turf course at Churchill is playing a lot more fair, and we'll get a little better trip, and I think she belongs. There's one really good filly in there. I'm trying to remember whose it is, maybe Rudy's, or I haven't handicapped the race really good, but other than that, it looks like a pretty wide-open field.
Oh, excellent.
Maybe Al's. I forgot. We enter so far in advance right now, you kind of forget.
It's funny how that's evolved with the early. You should also ask, let me get back to Red Carpet Ready, actually, and see what we can expect going forward.
She's doing really well, Steve. She breezed the day before yesterday here at Keeneland. And she's running, and I hope I give the name right. I think it's called the Leslie's Lady on June 11th at Churchill. And it's 7/8, it's not graded, it's a listed race, but I like to stay at home as long as I can, and it's a track she's 3-for-3 on, and I feel good about it. The timing was good, so we're going to run her right back at Churchill on June 11th. And then if things go good and you don't want to get ahead of yourself, you know, she'd be pointed to the test.
Well, and of course, that's the natural. I mean, everybody with a good three-year-old filly, you know, the test is everybody's target. Would you do anything in between? Would you?
She would not. That's one of the reasons we want to stay at home. Don't have to ship. Only ship one time, and we would give us. I know it's 2 months, but she runs really good fresh. No problem. We did that from Florida to her to the eight bills, and I think that's what we would do. That's kind of our reason to stay in here. If there's the one in the middle, which I'm very familiar with.
Yeah, you want the victory ride.
Yeah, but it would add one more shipment to us, and I don't think we would do that. She'll obviously be nominated. Things can change, but I believe we would stay right here and just wait.
And that which leads to the question, because you know, trainers, there's a lot of times the trainers love to, you know, to have a horse in a race that is named for a horse that they trained. Or in the case of Al Stahl, Al always likes to have a horse in the Big Al race at Fairgrounds. Have you won the victory ride?
I have not. It would be nice to do that, but it would just have to fit her schedule. I didn't want to crunch too much into her. And things can change. She might tell me that she wants to do that, but with where I'm stable, Steve, I'd have to go to Belmont, come back, and then go to Saratoga, or go to Belmont and then move to Saratoga early. And that's a long, you know, quite a bit in advance. And I don't think I would do that, but I've done stranger, so we'll let her get through the first one first. I don't want to look too far ahead of myself.
Well, and of course, she got beaten the Acorn.
She did. I still haven't figured out how, but she did. She got beat by a 50-1 shot, and I was devastated because I just couldn't believe she could lose. And then she came back and beat Extra Heat in the test. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, she got a Count Conjurer. And in retrospect, I think I ruined a little bit of her brilliance by running her as a four-year-old. You know, she wasn't the same horse. She won, and she came back and won the Madison, and then got beat, then won again. And then in the end, she just, you know, she lost that speed because in my training career, she was the fastest horse I ever had by far. I don't know that she was the best, but she was the fastest.
Well, that and that debut, right? She had that smashing, she had a crazy debut.
Yep, and the second race was not far from that at Belmont, getting ready. Again, when she got beat in the one race, it was kind of sick because that filly, they did run back against each other in the test, and that was more the result I thought we would have.
Wow, I'm just looking at that 50-1. That's not. She won by 14¼ lengths in her debut, and she was
She ran. She may have run 100 number or better in that maiden race.
I want to check that. In fact, I'm gonna try to dig that out too. This was 2001. With Pat Day, and it was Forest Secrets. Wow,
yeah, Johnny Ward
with a Debbie Oxley with a horse of Debbie Oxley's, a Forest Wildcat, 50-1 with McCarran, and Real Cozy. I forget this race. I remember she got beat, but I forgot this was a three horse. Photo type finish. Four Secrets, Victory Ride, Real Cozy, Unbridled Elaine, and Caressing.
Yeah, pretty good bunch.
Wow. I might have been there too. I mean, I was living. I must have been there. In fact, that was Belmont Day, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. 2001. Absolutely there for Point Given.
Yeah.
For what should have been the Triple Crown.
Yeah, there you go.
Rusty, this was fabulous. And there's plenty of other nice horses that I could probably, you know, bring. I'll bring up one more. Work of Fiction.
work of fiction. I, you know, got her maiden rope, found out what she wanted to do. We took her to Indiana. I think I got a little, you know, a little aggressive trying to get a filly in a stake, did a little too much, you know, was right in the race to the last 16th of a mile, didn't get anything, but we'll back off of her now and run her at Churchill, the end of the beat, an allowance race, and then decide which way she goes for the summer.
Nice. Because that, the maiden.
The horse I have, though, it's funny you didn't bring him up. The horse that I really like, before it's all over, will be Sweet Cherry Pie. He's, I think that's a really good horse. He got beat at Churchill. I think he ran into an extremely tough horse of Brad's, who had broke his maiden first time out very easily, came back, and they hooked up and ran really hard at each other. The 16th pole, he was the best horse and won, but I wouldn't be surprised if my horse didn't move over to the turf for his next start and be something special on the grass. He's out of an all-grass family. He's out of Kit and Joy's mare that ran third in the Breeders' Cup and was a really good stake horse on the grass. Twirling Candy, and I've been a little bit lucky with the Twirling Candies on the grass.
I like it. This was BBN. This is Twirling Candy. Here it is, out of Sweet Cat, and $175,000 Keeneland yearling, and actually it was a $32,000 weanling.
Yeah, gorgeous horse too. I don't know why. Why he didn't, you know, there's probably always reasons. They develop later, they have this, they have that, but he's a horse that I really think's got a future.
Sweet Cherry Pie, everybody, if you're keeping notes, and a lot of you do. Rusty, this was super productive and a lot of fun, even though we had to start it out with an appropriate tribute.
Well, I appreciate you thinking of him.
Not at all. Rusty Arnold, everybody. Rusty, we will we see you? We're going to see you in New York now.
Probably not till Saratoga.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be there till then.
All right.
So. Okay, Steve.
Thanks a lot. Rusty
all
Arnold,
right,
everybody. You got it.
Thanks.
Rusty, just terrific. Wow. Let's take the top of the hour break. We'll go... and spin back with Naja Thompson. Haven't talked. I've seen Naj a million times. I've seen him everywhere. He keeps showing up. So we'll get Naj in here. That's an interesting when you know, those of you that listen have listened for any period of time. When they bring them up, when I don't have to bring them up, that's usually a telltale sign. Sweet Cherry Pie. The horse of Brad's that beat him in that allowance, that was last Sunday? Yeah, last Sunday, 21st. Saudi Crown. Saudi Crown. Probably be able to. Yeah, let's tell you right away. What kind of a. I get curious. As to. There it is. Okay. Eighth race. 6.5 furlong allowance. Saudi Crown. There he is. 92 buyer. And that horse is 2 for 2. And Always Dreaming. FNQ Stables. This is a $240,000 OBS purchase. Debuted successfully at Keeneland in April. So with all the three-year-olds, Brad Cox is stocked with. Here's one under the radar. Saudi Crown. Bred by China Horse Club. Always Dreaming out of a Tappet mare. Interesting. All right. Write that name down. Saudi Crown. I that one slipped through the cracks on me. And boy, for a horse, here's a horse that got a 95 buyer, Sweet Cherry Pie, breaking the maiden on dirt, and yet Rusty feels that his future's on the turf, twirling candy out of the kitten's joy mare. Interesting. Yeah, that was fun. Rusty Arnold has been doing it successfully for a long, long time. As you can tell. How about that? His first graded win coming at Bowie. That's amazing how that came up. Crazy. Doesn't take much for us to go rabbit hole on these airwaves, right? And we got a nice victory ride conversation in, too. She was terrific. The wheel turns. A horse that time forgot. You know how they name TDN Rising Stars? I'm going to name them an At the Races Horse That Time Forgot. The wheel turns. The wheel turns here. Naja Thompson when we come back Memorial Day.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night.